you wanted to get your life back together. Make things right with your family. You think this is helping?
He's got information that I need.
What information? Never mind. You can't tell me. Fine. But Jack, if Tony doesn't find anything, you could end up in jail.
Probably.
Then what are you doing? Jack. Answer me.
Nina, you can look the other way once, and it's no big deal. Except it makes it easier for you to compromise the next time, and pretty soon, that's all you're doing is compromising because that's how you think things are done. You know those guys I blew the whistle on? You think they were the bad guys? Because they weren't. They weren't bad guys. They were just like you and me. Except they compromised once.
Soli's back in the studio, and with him, he brought Everybody Counts co-host Mike Martini once again.
Hello there. How's everyone today?
Oh, damn it. We got too many things to do.
Once the damage is done, you're not going to be able to cut a deal. Give me the kill code now.
Too many bombs.
Well, that's a good thing with podcasts, though. There's so much you can have to do, the quicker they'll go by, right?
There you go.
More to talk about.
Hey, here's the thing. Do we want to slow down or do we want to keep speeding up?
Ludicrous speed now.
Ludicrous speed now. Oh, man. We decided if we were going to revisit just any of these franchises, we might as well just, you know, we can talk about moments and everything and all that. But we might as well at this point, we're revisiting the Jack Bauer saga. Let's talk about the various antagonists, traitors, enemy spies, and other recurring henchmen who plagued the entire series run.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of villains in 24. There's always layers upon layers.
And various layers. You've been a faithful fan since day one. I pretty much caught it later in the deal when it had really just swept the Emmys with the floor. Swept the floor with the Emmys. And then just all these other actors were appearing in other hit shows. So I caught on it. Conan O'Brien was doing a spoof on it when he hosted an award show one time. So I couldn't escape it. It was everywhere.
Nice. Yeah. I started getting into it when we still had to record the shows off of with VCRs back in the day.
Probably
not that too long ago either, 22 years ago, but I remember I was working like a job where I was working second shift. So every now and then I wouldn't be able to catch it, but I was just, you know, cross my fingers that the show is being recorded at home some way, shape, or form, so I could keep up with all the twists and turns.
Absolutely. Now, as of course, with any spy show, spoiler. You've been warned. Spoiler.
Yeah. A lot of spoilers in this podcast today.
Plenty to choose from. There's no wrong or right answer, really. It seems like fans are pretty, kind of like even with Bosch and James Bond, everyone's kind of agreed upon most of the villains, and any that didn't stand out as well, it might have been just on a formulaic entry or just people just couldn't keep it up. They just remember the face more than the name or the actor playing it.
Yeah. Of course, you also had big actors at the times being brought in as villains as well. So that was always fun to see.
Mm-hmm. A good idea, too, to just kind of just, because they went for ones who had kind of been around for years. And I know at one point, like, famous A-listers wanted to be on the show. Ben Stiller and Jennifer Aniston were some of them. And the producers said no. They're like, no, he'll be too noticeable. Like, people are going to associate the celebrity with instead of the character.
Yep. Well, I think she wasn't really known at that time because it was before Castle. Wasn't Stana Katic?
Yeah.
In one or two episodes. I can't remember if she was a bad person or evil character or not. I forgot that.
She was like a Russian spy, and it was just interesting how this guy who had been on Lost was like her courier, and Jack is really testing the waters. Like, it's just so wild how he just goes into the interrogation room, knocks out the guard guarding her, and this is like, and by the way, you are gonna die in this unless you tell me something. Like, how'd you set up my girlfriend? How'd you set up this and that? I'm not playing. And it just gets even more tacked on when you're realizing, oh, he's gonna have to get on a plane, he's gonna have to find these other guys who are stealing information for a living. It's like, man. I guess we could start with like some of the main ones. How about Ira Gaines, the one who played by Michael Massey of The Crow, and he kidnaps Jack's family, and he's basically doing his best Die Hard Free, where he's just like instigating conflict over the phone, saying, I know where you are, I got eyes on you at all times, and you will bring this, and you will assassinate the presidential candidate, and you will go into this car and do this or that, or I will kill your daughter over the phone.
Yeah, exactly. Ira Gaines was a really solid character. I forgot to write down how many episodes he appeared in, though.
He's basically half the season. Through. Like, by episode 12, when Jack finally saves his family from that bunker, he's dead, and then you're like, oh, but that's not it. There's clearly other people at play here.
That's just it about the show 24. You know, there's going to be 24 episodes, at least for the first seven seasons. I think 8 went to the 12 episode final.
This season, format. They actually, that first year, they thought they were going to get canceled after 12 episodes because the ratings were low.
Oh, was that it?
Yeah. And so that's why they kind of ended it with that looming shot on the copter, because they weren't sure where to stop production, you know. And fortunately, the DVD sells and Emmy buzz was all the talk of the town. Because like Sopranos, it kind of just invented the whole binge watch in your own comfort without having to rely on a VCR tape. And it was just interesting just seeing how they just kept experimenting with different formulas. Who would have guessed that then, lo and behold, we're back to square one. He's in another bunker with an off-the-grid security company. And then, lo and behold, oh, all these war criminals I put away from Serbia and Kosovo. It's none other than Dennis Hopper's Andre Drazen and his evil sons, played by Aisha Collins, who you might know as Castiel on Supernatural. And Victor is Hopper's character. And Andre was the main son pulling the strings, played by Zeljko Ivanek, who you might know from Homicide, Oz, and Black Hawk Down. He's the one with the glasses. He's always intimidated.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yep. It's been a long time since I've seen season one.
Yeah.
It's almost time for a rewatch, I think.
Rewatch again.
Might as well.
What do you think of how they made it just say, hey, it's not just a terrorist group, it's a personal vendetta, it's a family of terrorists.
I liked that, you know, because like you said, you thought it was like a terrorist cell, and then it turns out to be a family that's trying to pay back Jack Bauer for killing his family, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, wife basically, and, yeah, he had
wife
like
and daughter his,
yeah, something like that. He had done like a special forces mission, and I liked how they came around in season 3, and then they're like, oh, and by the way, this other ex-MI6 guy who helped you in your kill squad mission, you know, he's back with a vengeance, and he wants to basically destroy all of LA with a virus.
Yep, exactly. So I kind of like that. You know, it was a different change, or maybe not a different change, but just something a little bit different for the times. It wasn't just terrorist related.
Interconnected, unusual kind of terrorism too. You got cartels before Breaking Bad took over. You got but yeah, the virus is still freaky to this day. It's like, how did this come out before COVID?
Yeah, really.
when I was showing this to family in the 2010s, smallpox and, you know, SARS virus had kind of already, and even mono had kind of been the talk here and there, but they still weren't extremely contagious like COVID is now.
Yeah.
I guess I couldn't skip over Saw villain Peter Kingsley, played by Tobin Bell.
I authorize a very large sum, large enough to compensate you for any kind of guilt you might feel about this.
It's not for sale.
If someone wants to buy it, it's for sale.
How can you justify starting a war just to profit from the outcome?
We're just controlling the chaos, that's all.
In season two.
I had that written down.
Yeah.
Season two.
Yeah, he's basically working with all these oil tycoons and just wanting to up the prices by... It was just... I still don't know how they got that on the air when the war in Iraq was such a heated topic. And they're just like, hey, let's just comment on it now. Like, we got all these people, you know, who are fear mongers and everything, and we'll want to strike back at a country the minute they hear a threat. What if we encrypted a fake so-called threat and we kill all these other people that are part of the cover-up, even though that ultimately just leads Jack to the main big bads. And then after torturing Jack, you know, butt-ass naked, oh, and now we're going to incriminate the president's spiteful ex-wife. Oh. Really got complex.
Yeah, Sherry Palmer. I had that one written down too.
Yeah.
It was because it was... Wasn't it found out in season two that she was kind of behind some of the... So season two or season three where she was kind of behind some of the behind the scenes, you know, assisting.
Definitely season two. And then in season three, she still like helps out with a few other murders and is like, man, this woman cannot go anywhere without a body count.
And the thing with Sherry Palmer too, it's like, even when she's saying I'm telling the truth, you always know, no, she's not.
Yeah.
In fact, wasn't it didn't she withhold pills from a character?
Yeah, that dude was a bad apple too. He's threatening to bribe President Palmer unless his brother Wayne backs off with his affair with his spouse. And much like the one assistant who fell to her death, they just break away from it because they're like, anything else we do to cover it up, it's just going to get even more implausible.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll leave it to your imagination.
Like I've said before, and I'll say it again, many layers to each character, not just the villains, but you even like Jack Bauer, Tony Almeida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of layers involved with each season, it seemed like.
Absolutely.
Even the people that you... It's like, what was it? Somebody written down here. Well, I was like, when I was looking up how many episodes some of the villains had been in, you know, some of them were only in like 8 or 10 episodes throughout a season. Or it's like, take John Hodges, you know, John Voight's character from season.
Creepy, season much like his enemy of the state six. Character.
Having the courage to make those hard choices gives us a lot in common, Mr. Bauer.
Let me explain something to you. You and I have absolutely nothing in common. All that you have done today is create a scenario by attacking your own country that has made you valuable again. Today has been nothing short of a desperate grab for power, and it has failed. You have failed.
Yeah, exactly.
Do as I say, not as I do. I'm keeping America safe, but meanwhile I'm murdering other people who don't fund my Blackwater-type operation.
Yeah, that's right. Defense contractor, that's
right. Not Stark Industries, that was.
Yeah.
Was it
that's
Stark?
A different franchise.
Right. That would be a fun thing. Yeah, it was Starkwood. That's what it was. That's
Starkwood. Well, you got a half point, right?
Maybe
half
Tony Stark's in there some. I don't know.
Yeah, that was pre Iron Man. You never know.
Fun fact, I was actually looking at the Wicca and I totally spaced on how this one terrorist in the final season, Legacy, who was active for one episode, actually revealed on his profile that he worked at Starkwood. And I was like, whoa, I totally missed that. Usually I pay attention to all the other stuff. Like, I knew so-and-so was like a cousin of Edgar and everything, but I didn't know about that. But I just thought that was interesting how a one-off character, they still played into it briefly. But yeah, all those mercs were deadly and dangerous in season seven. Cause you're just like, man, so we already got all these other loose ends, like Alan Wilson, Bauer's terrorist, you know, father and brother,
mm-hmm.
and ex-president, the Richard Nixon-esque, you know, Charles Logan.
Yep.
They all killed President David Palmer, Michelle, almost killed Tony. but he just had to go into protection and then help Bill with some off the grid stuff. And then to add insult to injury, they're not only like terrorizing the new, next few presidents, then they're involved with the Russians and getting Renee killed. So they're just like, man, just when does this end?
Yeah, exactly. That also goes to the writing as well, though. I mean, sometimes it's good to go back to the well, but at times it's like, well, hasn't this already been played out enough? But for for me, it's like it didn't really matter as much with the, or it's like, oh, this was used in another season or this has been done in movies or whatever. Mm-hmm. I didn't care, you know, because it was Jack Bauer trying to save the day, trying to get to the bottom of all the plots to take out presidents or take out just people in general. I mean,
you and I both know that your client isn't clean and that he conspired to steal a U.S. nuclear warhead.
All my client wants is due process.
Mr. Weiss, these people are not going to stop attacking us today until millions and millions of Americans are dead. Now, I don't want to bypass the Constitution, but these are extraordinary circumstances.
The Constitution was born out of extraordinary circumstances, Mr. Bauer. This plays out by the book, not in a back room with a rubber hose.
I hope you can live with that.
Was it season 4 or season 3 where they were attacking nuclear power plants?
Four. You had it right. Yeah. And to have the mummy guy, Habib Marwan, you know, Arnold Vosloo playing him. This is like, and then Edgar's so distracted by not only not getting along with everybody, but then just deciding, whoa, anyone could die at any moment, mm-hmm. including my mother.
Well, wasn't he also worried about his mom? Because his mom was in one of the blast areas or the affected area.
And she's decided, I'm going to just kill myself. I'm not going to wait to get dies, even though they prevent it. It's like, man, distractions galore.
Exactly. But it's like, because you also feel for those characters, though, too, the ones that you never saw on camera.
Even the people playing being unprofessional have a moment in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they're attacking a gal wrongfully expected of being a mole, and they're like, okay, she was a jerk earlier, but this is wrong. They shouldn't be torturing her.
Yep.
Then for them to get to the main mole, Marion Taylor, and oh, yeah, she used to be this hotshot agent, you know, Curtis's ex-girlfriend, and she's working for all these other guys who, much like Starkwood, are a private military contractor industry who are ready to get their hands dirty and murder people for money. And I'm surprised they didn't bring that into all the other shady organizations, but I was glad it was a one-off, like for free episodes. They're like, and by the way, now that you've eliminated all our kill squads, now we got all these other guys who still want to help Marwan set a bomb off and melt down every power plant.
You and I both know all I want to do right now is kill you, but I have my orders. We run out of time. You win. I've been instructed to ask you what you want.
What I want is already happening.
The death and destruction of innocent life is a means to an end. Why don't we just skip to the end?
To the end?
Everything that you did today, you did for a reason, for your people. What do you want to change?
It's fun seeing every season play out like, or every season play out the way it did. I always loved the 24 episode arc because, like you said, they'd usually wrap up something halfway through and then, oh, here comes something else, you know.
We're so back to basics. Doing that.
Back to basics, trying to go back to square one to figure out who did what and
right
to who. That's why I know I'm probably skipping ahead, but that's why I didn't really care for the 12 episode format when season 8 really? Came around and Bosch Legacy, 24 Legacy, because it would if it was done a little bit better, where maybe you covered the first like 8 to 10 hours and then the last 2 to 4 hours.
So you wanted more of a skip in the middle versus at the very end?
Yeah, skip in the middle then at the end, because it was, you know, you had 11 hours and 40 minutes or whatever. And then it skipped to the end of the day for like the last 15, 20 minutes where you're seeing, you know, Audrey Raines being loaded onto a plane?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And there was that. They did that with X-Files, Prison Break, and even what's the other one that returned recently? It'll come to me. But yeah, I'm okay with it being shorter. But like you say, it could have been a little more focused, like on skip ahead, like, okay, this just happened, this just happened, this Silvercrest happened. Now let's maybe, I guess, skip to hours after the carnage and then maybe have a little more relaxing time instead of just 12 hours later, they've supposedly slept off screen and now they're at the exchange with the prisoners.
Yeah.
Getting the last bad apple.
Exactly. I don't know whose idea it was to go from 24 episodes down to 12. I don't know if that was a producer or the producer.
I know the writers said they preferred it because they didn't have to risk having filler episodes or too many moles, but I think they could have just had a better story editor.
Yep. Because it's like, even if it was like 12 to 16 episodes, just something where you get like the first three quarters of the way through, skip ahead. Okay, so we're handling this. Even maybe have Jack take a nap or sleep for 8 hours, you know?
Right. He basically...
Let the guy get some rest.
Earlier today, you said that I was cursed. That anyone I touched ended up dead or ruined. How dare you? How dare you?
He basically only naps if he gets knocked out.
Yeah, pretty much. And then, or it's like, was it in season one where he has that woman in the trailer or whatever, he kind of nods off for a few minutes in there.
Right, when he's having to use a hostage as bait, and then then he's even briefly eating in the interrogation room. And I know the creators hated that when the filmmakers inserted that in there, and they're like, well, we just wanted to add some little plausibility. And you're like, no, we don't want anyone to be reminded of restroom breaks. I'm like, well, we're going to ask it anyway.
Yeah, really. When do they ever go to the bathroom or eat or sleep?
I mean, a little known fact, if you do sweat all day, you pretty much have gotten rid of all that toxic water that's otherwise going to be omitted from your body. But at the same time, you're like, yeah, I think someone needs to go behind a shed real fast and take a leak.
Exactly. But going back to where you're talking about with moles, that was always the running, plot throughout a season. You never knew who the mole was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like in a season,
I've seen all kinds of people even love this show, like even Indian and South African people I see have really responded to the show, and in a good way, not in a I hate the show. I've seen some people still hate it, but because of certain terrorist depictions, but they seem like the type who just hate any kind of foreign entity being represented as an antagonist. It's whatever. At least they gave him a story.
Well, that's why I kind of like the Charles Logan being kind of like the marionette, or you know, puppet master, basically, in seasons 5 and 6, where it's like
all the money.
Yep.
Tell him anything. You're the president.
Agent Pierce, we're in the middle of a meeting, if you don't mind.
Mr. President, my name is Jack Bauer, and I'm sorry to have to confront you like this, but your chief of staff is withholding information that is vital to this nation's security.
It's a homegrown terrorist instead of overseas terrorist.
Absolutely. To add insult to injury, we thank the angry Chinese diplomat, you know, Qing Zi, played by Sai Ma, who you might know from Rush Hour and the TV show Martial Law. Is like, we thought, okay, he's going to constantly torture Jack, that's the worst. Oh, Chris Henderson, played by Peter Weller, you know, RoboCop. Oh, he's much like him. And then Nina Myers being a mole is like the ultimate stab in the back. And it's like, to then have the president, who Jack already says, kind of like Bosch, who says, I don't do politics. Bauer's like, I don't even care who's in office. I just want them to abide by the rules.
Exactly.
And I love
that. Even in season 7, where you had Katie Sackhoff being the...
Oh, 8, yeah.
Mole.
Another mole.
Season 8, right?
Yeah, 7, she was 8? The only... I didn't care for the other villains in that, but I definitely liked her on that, because it was just cool to see her play against type and play a different type of mole. You're like, okay, so she was basically kind of like ISIS. She's like a brainwashed, like, trailer park gal. She doesn't even remember her real name anymore. She basically was a sleeper agent without even realizing it. She just was psychologically unsound and thought everyone was like out to get her. It was like, damn, that's some toxic stuff.
Yep. And it was also the or not really underlying storylines where he's helping an ex-boyfriend try to get a crap ton of money.
Oh, yeah. And you're like,
you know, where it's like,
what?
Like, she's trying to not lose her job by, you know,
got a resort to
being outed from her past. So that's why it was kind of when the first time I saw that, I'm like, oh, wow. You know, I didn't see that one coming, you know, where, well, there was a few where I didn't see them see the characters being the mole. I mean,
right.
Season
we
one
just thought she was a professional person. We didn't think, oh, she's going to resort to murder and kill some of her coworkers.
Exactly. I mean, you go back to season one with Nina Myers, you know, I didn't see that playing out either the way it did.
Yeah, because they do the reverse psychology and second guessing. You're like, hey, I'm doing things off the grid, but I'm not the mole. And then, oh, who is this person? And isn't it weird how the same place where she's making her getaway is also the same room where she ends up getting killed two seasons later?
Yeah, exactly.
A very unusual villain irony. It's like she knows the whole thing from top to bottom. It's wild how in season three, we already got the Cordilla virus that's going to infect everybody, but then she has the insult to injury to basically trick all the CTU guys into activating a computer virus. You're like, man, how many viruses can we tell?
Well, that was the running theme too. 24 CTU constantly being under attack, you know?
Oh man.
Whether it's a mole or from, what was it, season two, where I think they blew up part of the building.
Season two. That was evil. And all those guys, like, hey, take a former gang that Jack, you know, infiltrated and then silently left. And, you know, they're not buying it. But the other main guy is going along with it. He's like, okay, you're here mm-hmm. for something? Okay. You good? You can prove your word. And then lo and behold, it was like, oh, and Jack, to maintain your cover, it reminded me of a Splinter Cell or video game or Tom Clancy novel. Is like, by the way, you got to let this still happen. And like,
yep.
And it's a long look on his face. He's like, no, can't let that happen.
But sometimes he's just stuck in the middle of, you know, trying to get deeper into the what is it called?
The murky undercover
network. Thank you. Network. Yeah. Network. Getting deeper into the network to figure out what layers to figure out. And then with Nina Myers coming in on season three as well, too,
mm-hmm.
it's like, what was it? I was trying to remember something that when I was first watching those episodes where she came in, she was trying to warn, you know, the actual bad guys that, you know, Jack's not here to help you guys. He's here to take you guys down. And they all they cared about was seeing the dollar signs and
yeah.
Didn't trust Nina at all.
We'll murder anyone as long as it takes. And then, oh, and by the way, this happened. This was an inconvenience, but we're still going to resort to just sloppy murder at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it is wild how Abu Fayyid, the season six main terrorist villain, is like, instead of like Marwan, who was pretty polished and had a bunch of traitorous Americans and ex-Air Force guys doing his dirty work, as well as having the power plants and even just Muslim American families doing his dirty work. This is like with Fayyid. Say what you will about all his other henchmen. I just thought it was interesting how it's like, this is sending a message to Jack. Is like, hey, you killed my brother years ago in prison. And now I'm just going to use drone strikes. And now we're the U.S. military are using drones to do our dirty work overseas. And it's like, man, the terrorists in this universe were using it first.
Yeah. In fact, I know I always bring up Bosch every now and then, but
yep.
DeJuan Johnson.
In a better world, he would be in L.A. and get everyone out of there.
No, I was just saying that DeJuan Johnson, I think, played the drone operator.
Yes, he did. Oh, in season seven.
Season
yeah.
Six. Season seven. Sorry.
Yeah, but that was cool, too, that they were still using drones. I mean, they even use it in season nine in London. But yep. Yeah, I is definitely where I first saw DeJuan Johnson. He had been in like a bunch of Fritos ads. And here he is. All those other guys, before you get to Alan Wilson and Hodges in season seven, are interesting too, because they're working with Dubaku and the South African warlord Juma, played by Candyman and Star Trek's Tony Todd. And it's like,
Yes.
But
I love Tony Todd's character and
the voice, the menace, and he's like, I will slit your daughter's eyes one by one. I promise you, Madam President, unless you sign a treaty. Then basically makes all my war crimes legal and everything.
Yep.
And
yeah, exactly. I think they're the only ones that infiltrated that far into the White
absolutely.
House.
Absolutely. This is before Olympus has fallen, but I just found it wild how Hodges is also happy to just give him all these codes, and he doesn't care if he signs his name in the treaty too, because he's like, yeah, I want to make all my murderous corporation legal too. It's like, do you hear yourself?
Yeah. Can you just take a step back, put the straitjacket on, please, if you would. And
it almost makes you want to have, I don't watch reality TV, but I'm always quoting like cheesy stuff like To Catch a Predator. Have a seat right here.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's
a lot of bad guys in 24. When you're talking about Abu Fayyad, he was also responsible for kidnapping Morris O'Brien.
Oh, man. And he's doing the drills on him just like...
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack got the electrocution and being stabbed somehow not in the spine. He's using a drill on him. You're like, holy moly, I've never seen that much gore on network TV.
Yeah, I know. That was a little bit not really shocking. I don't know.
It was shocking, but at the same time, like, it wasn't, they weren't trying to do it just for shits and giggles, but at the same time, you're like, ooh, yep. Put the kids to bed.
What is it? They were trying to get Morris O'Brien to
like just
make a device. Or finish a device or reactivate a device.
Yeah. They knew he was a hacker and they're like, still,
that's right.
We want to sidetrack CTU. But then lo and behold, those couriers decide, oh, by the way, you know, Fayyad never intended to pay you for your time. So you're going to get murdered too. Just like, jeez. It does remind me of like season 5 and 6 of Bosch, some of those other like anti-American terrorists is like, we're going to bomb a courtroom.
Yep.
Which is wild because that sounds like an episode of Homeland too.
I never got into Homeland. I take that back. I think I watched the first season of Homeland.
I'd be curious to hear your take on it. I think you'd like the presidents on that one more than the ones on here.
Oh, I bet. Well, I did like, I love David Palmer.
Oh, yeah, we all love Palmer. It's just the other ones have like other people and their staff who are keeping info from them or being unprofessional.
Yeah, exactly. The mole, not mole, because he was the vice president's chief of staff. Wasn't he kind of, obviously the vice president as well had his fingers in some evil doing as well.
Oh, totally. With Logan and company. Yeah, those guys are wild too, because they're like, they're pretty much just saying, I mean, the fact that they tell Secret Service, by the way, you will kill like the Madam President's and the First Lady's various underlings. And, oh, you're going to go kill Jack because he's a liability and we don't want to exchange him to China. Yeah. It's like, what?
Exactly. A lot of, and Jack goes through it a lot, you know, when he gets taken by the at the end of season.
You feel dead in those. Season 5, he gets captured, and season 6, he returns. But yeah, just even with that beard, you're just like, holy moly.
And seeing him broken the way he, I mean, obviously it was great acting on Kiefer Sutherland's part, but
the body language alone.
Yeah, body language when he was trying to interrogate a guy where, you know, a season or two before he'd do it without breaking a sweat, but was he like putting something under the fingernails or under a kneecap or something like that? And
it's
the shakes or something like that.
Yeah, he can barely stand up for a minute. He's afraid that someone will land a hand on him. He wants to literally, I mean, much like he bites that one terrorist's like ear off, he wants to do that to Ching so bad, but he's just glad that he's even still alive at that point. He's like, I'll get to you later.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of good evil villain characters throughout the series. Totally.
And giving them a moment in the sun, like, I was fortunate enough to interview Adani Marapas, who played Fayyad in season 6.
And
talked how interesting it was how he plays the character so different many different ways. It's like, first he plays him as kind of a warlord tyrant, then he plays him as like a revenge criminal, and then when he's trying to hide away and go into hiding, and he's getting beat up by some of those Muslim phobic barflies. I was like, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. He also, once again, we did a reverse, and you're playing this character now as the victim of war crimes or torture there too. And it's like, to go from that many places. I mean, there's even a deleted scene with Marwan in day four where they show him actually getting with his family before he gets the nuclear football and everything.
And oh, really?
That would have been, I know they took it away because they didn't want to risk glamorizing the villain, but I thought that would have been an interesting like add-on to just show that, hey, he's got a family who could die at any minute too, and he's organized. He's practically a career criminal before he even starts doing all these, you know, terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys in suits. Oh, man. Obviously, there was plenty of terrorists in the last two seasons, but I kind of felt like they all kind of flowed together after a while. It was kind of a retread of, once again, just people wronged by the characters in wartime.
Yep. Yeah, we, wish I separated out my notes by seasons.
That's all good.
Kind of have them all kind of over the place, but going back to, I wanted to talk a little bit more with the, with Graham Bauer, you know, I didn't see that one coming. I mean, because that was between two seasons, seasons five and six, before it's revealed that Graham was the one that was trying to have his brother killed.
Oh, man.
Then you get into season six and backstabbing big time. So out of the series, I mean, there's always been my favorite villains, like Nina Myers. What was the other? Charles Logan.
Oh, and Assassin Mandy. We can't not mention Mandy. You poison the president. Exactly. You kind of start off the show with season one, and then you kidnap us to make Michelle give her a getaway copter in season four, and you're like, man.
Yep. And then, going back to Graham Bauer, Philip Bauer, you know, I didn't see that one coming. Obviously, I don't think they really talked about Bauer's family at all.
Yeah, they wanted to.
Seasons...
That they said in like a brief deleted scene or special feature how they wanted to kind of make him, I don't know, kind of be more like a Shakespearean twist where he had actually, you know, the reason Jack had gotten in away and joined the army years ago was because he was just a hard father. And it's like, you get that, but then they wanted to add some other stuff, like he might have molested him or something. And they're like, that's a little too dark. Let's shy away.
Let's shy away from that. Just make him be, you know,
just. A shithead dad.
Opposite of what Jack Bauer is. So
yeah, absolutely. Just have him be a guy who just had, again, a private contractor company and wanted to just basically sell out his country for info and data.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, with Graham and Philip Bauer, it's like you didn't see it coming. And then when Jack is interrogating his brother, you know, he sees his dad kind of staring him down. He's like, oh, shoot, you know, so he stops the interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip finishes the job. Didn't see that one coming either.
Absolutely. And then
it's like, holy cow.
And then he's like, oh, my God, did I do this? It's like, no, but you made me think I do it, which is even more diabolical.
Exactly.
Oh,
so not only does he kill his son, but he also makes his other son believe that he was responsible for killing his brother. So it's like, geez, how evil can you be, dude?
Yeah, relentless and just psychotic.
That's just it. They get some actors that play really good psychos.
Just glad that they could even stage it with all those multi-camera setups and the fact that that almost didn't, you know, that wasn't in the script. Stephen Hopkins was just inspired by High Noon and like a bunch of other movies that had experimented with before. And I just can't help it now when I watch an older movie like, say, Airport, and I'll see a split screen. And I'm like, oh. Inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't like CSI Miami try to do stuff like that too?
Yeah, that.
Well, CSI as well, but
X-Files.
I always remember like watching CSI Miami. It's like it would have like multiple screens, but it'd all be like different angles of the person doing like a DNA test or something like that. Where it's like,
yeah, that was more flashy style.
I like 24 better, where it has four or five or.
Yeah, just different locations as opposed to
different locations, different characters. Well, you got the clock ticking down. Always love that sound.
Well, they just knew right away that from reading the script, it would be just too repetitive if they just kept cutting back and forth between locations.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, let's make them feel like they're all in the same room.
Yeah, exactly. So a question for you, Tony Almeida, evil character or anti-hero?
He's Jack Bauer if Jack basically had five more girlfriends die and just went off the edge. Because like,
well, you kind of see that with Annie Wershing's character being killed off.
Absolutely. Renee is another one. Curtis Manning, remember in Day Six, he decides to kill that terrorist who killed his militia.
Oh, that's right.
And he was like on a SEAL team with them, and he's like, no. Whatever happens, this guy is not leaving the interrogation room. I'm going to kill him. Mm-hmm. And Jack's like, sorry, dude, we got to use him to feed some intel to the president. They didn't have to kill Curtis, but I just thought it was interesting how everybody who gets out of line pretty much either gets hurt or just reminds Jack that he could have done that same dumb mistake. But yeah, Tony is interesting because it's like, he's not trying to be a villain, but he is kind of like the Punisher. He's using villainous means to do a selfish, you know, avengement.
Yep. Avenging the death of his wife and kid. I forgot she was pregnant.
She was pregnant, yeah.
I forgot all about that because which season did that happen? Season 5, right?
Yeah, season 5. And even to have that other guy who had been working with Peter Weller's character Henderson, I thought that was cool that they brought in Peter Wingfield from X-Men 2 and Highlander. He's like, he's only in 4 episodes, and it's wild how Tony even is reluctant to kill him because he's kind of been fighting a similar fight, even though he knows he's ultimately not a good guy.
Oh, yep.
It was like he was using all these cyber hackers and everything to pretty much destroy the criminal underworld. But so many gray areas again. What actors would you have liked to have seen play a villain on here? I can think of a few guys from Air Force One probably who would have been perfect.
Oh man, that's a good question. Obviously I didn't know Titus Welliver as an actor back then when I was watching 24, but he had played some good bad guys, so it would have been fun to see him in a season or few episodes. Who else was kind of big at that point?
I thought Jango Fett from Star Wars would have been fun. Temuera Morrison, he had done other crime shows and movies, but I just love it just when you get all these guys who can be chameleons and just add emphasis to the villains and all that.
Yeah.
Instead of just, I mean, Tony Todd was kind of as close as you got, but he just reminded me of so many other B-movie actors who would make mainstream appearances on TV, like Michael Ironside and Lance Henriksen, and you like, see, those guys... the bad guy in The Crow, Michael Wincott, I think would have been perfect, but as close as they got was they had him be the hacker in the second to last season who's kind of steals Chloe away.
That's right.
But if he was Michael Rooker in any
seasons? I can't remember.
Wasn't, but he would have been perfect. Yeah,
he could be a good bad guy because there's a lot of actors that can really play a bad guy character well.
Oh, yeah. When Michael Madsen first appeared as one of Jack's old buddies, I was like, oh, he's going to be a bad apple. He's going to betray him. I was like, nope, he's loyal, surprisingly.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. You never know who's exactly 100% on board with Jack or on the opposite spectrum where they're just using Jack to get what they want or get stuff. But that's a great question. What are the actors? Man. I'll have to try to get back to you on that one.
No, it's all good.
Who else did you have? You said you had a few. Did you mention them all?
I mentioned some of the Air Force One guys. Did you ever see the horror comedy Wishmaster?
No.
Oh, it's all good. Okay, so Andrew Devoff, I think, is an underrated actor, and he was the bad guy in movies like Toy Soldiers, and he's Gary Oldman's main henchman who gets in a fight with Harrison Ford in Air Force One, and I always thought he just had the voice for it where he could play most ethnicities and just give it a diabolical spin. I would be amiss if I did not mention the great, late, great Julian Sands, who played Vladimir Bierko in season 5.
Bierko.
Yeah, he's the main Russian guy with the basically anthrax type poison bomb.
Oh, that's right.
But that's just it. We forget about him because the presidential arc just overshadows so much of it. But it's interesting how he finds a clever way to always have his goons bust him out of and do a jailbreak. And I know that actor did say he was watching a lot of Pierce Brosnan, James Bond movies to get an idea for his villain. And I just remember when I saw it with my folks, I was just blown away. It's like, yeah, this guy, you know, people of today's world might know him from something like the Superman show, but he's done everything from being one of the gamblers who gets murdered and leaving Las Vegas to a bunch of other period piece stuff to playing the warlock.
So like you said, kind of, yeah, chameleon type of character.
Another chameleon, and yep. Kudos to him for just, he didn't even have to, unlike Juma, who was kind of like ready to die and just had no shame and just wanted people to kind of just stay away from him. He was mixing in politics. He was political, but only to an extent. Like at the end of the day, he was basically just using politics to just get what he wanted. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting seeing some of his other henchmen, because some of them I'd seen in like Die Hard 4 and a few other action shows. So it's like,
yeah, man. It's kind of fun. It's kind of fun going through some people's IMDb filmographies, because it's like, oh, I didn't know they were in that. You kind of right. Bring up sometimes like episodes, you know.
You played a vampire, and here you are now.
Yeah, exactly. I was going through. Who was it? Sorry, give me a second. I mean, even obviously, actors... John Voight speaks for himself, but it's like
right.
Stephen Saunders, who was played by Paul Blackthorne. Is that the one you mentioned there?
Yep, yep. And okay. I liked how one article compared it to the GoldenEye arc. I was like, yeah, because yes. he has the character's complete trust, and then he decides, oh, you know, that was all a lie. And he's very smooth with his operation, let alone, much like Bierko, dispatching all the other guys who have failed him, or who, again, we thought were running the show but aren't.
Yep. Yeah, and then I remember, wasn't Cal Penn like a runner of some sort
in season six?
Season six?
Oh. Yeah, he basically is, he takes that couple hostage, and he's like,
yep.
I love how he's like, by the way, I'm here to, you know, use you as a fall guy. You got to transport this bomb, and I need you guys to get me out of here. And that doesn't work out too well, does it?
Yeah, exactly. Never does.
Yeah, you go from How I Met Your Mother and Harold and Kumar to this.
But that was also good acting. It was also in the Superman Returns movies too, as one of Lex Luthor's.
I think so. Henchmen. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So it's always fun seeing like a comedic actor that can also do dramatic roles as well.
All right, we already got Mary Lynn as Chloe, and then have all these other guys mm-hmm. pop up. I mean, I did mention Aisha Tyler as Marianne, but I mean, that gave her a big career boost when she was doing stand-up and on Friends. Yep. It's like, man.
She's also appeared in a few episodes of Always Sunny in Philadelphia as well. Marianne.
Gail the Snail.
Gail the Snail, that's right. I just started watching. You know, a little bit off topic for a second. I just finally watched all the seasons of Always Sunny, just because I heard that Greg was always good in his role as Mac's dad, you know, so I wanted to catch up and see all the episodes.
Yeah, Greg Cummins from Bosch is on there, and it is funny how, again, just it's so low budget looking. That's how they were able to keep it on for so long. They didn't have to worry about pay cuts or anything.
Well, that's maybe another actor, though, too. Gregory played some really good, bad, evil characters throughout his career. Mm-hmm. It would have been fun to see him be in.
I'm surprised he didn't.
Episode 24. Yeah, it's like, I don't know.
As Jabroni, that I'm not a terrorist, but I play one on TV, comedian. He was in season two as one of the guys in the van.
Oh, that's right.
As a change of heart. He's like, basically half these guys you could say are kind of the Leroy Jenkins of their team. They always have second thoughts about doing all these awful things. So that makes it kind of fun too. What terrorist is going to flip, or who's going to be actually a federal agent undercover, or who's going to be none of those things, and a totally different plot twist.
Exactly. that's just it. There's plot twists pretty much in almost every episode. Cliffhangers almost every single episode, even ending season on cliffhangers. Because what was it? The Mandy assassin you had mentioned, she poisoned David Palmer by shaking his hand at some point in the last episode of season one.
Yep.
Oh
man.
Yeah, a lot of good villains and a lot of underlings of villains throughout all the seasons of the show. That's for sure. Totally.
And you're only as good as your villains, but I'm telling you, they gave the Die Hard movies a run for their money.
Oh, absolutely. I enjoyed all the seasons of 24, and I've only watched the Legacy show once through.
That's all good.
Like I said, it was only the 12 episodes. I watched it when it aired first on Fox.
And you didn't see the one in London?
Oh, I saw the one in London, too. Sorry.
Oh, that was 12 episodes, too. Yeah.
Well, I mean, with that, you know, like I said, Legacy and season 8 or 9, whichever one was the shortened ones, just 12 episodes. That's why I didn't really care for Legacy as much. Plus, no Jack Bauer, spoiler alert. But with the 12 episode format, I didn't really care for that as much. But I do want to go back and rewatch the Legacy one too, because I know they were trying to kind of revitalize the show with a different character. But I think a lot of people are just turned off that, you know, well, without Jack Bauer, it's not really 24, is it? Type of thing.
I just wish they could have given Chloe, and I mean, since they brought Tony back, they should have just had Tony, Chloe, and like some other guys just. Kind of what they almost did with Prison Break, just have their own kind of just like vigilante crew that solves crimes. That would have been a fun Equalizer or The Pretender kind of show. I would love to watch every week. It is what it is. I mean, they did talk about doing one where kind of like almost like a Homeland or that Bosch season, where they would have a federal agent who gets word that a terrorist is going to sabotage a courtroom trial, and it's like, see, that could have been a fun ticking time bomb of a thriller.
Yeah, exactly. It would be fun to see something like that, but
I mean, the writers are now doing that with their Accused TV show, where it's been labeled the Twilight Zone, but if you had it in a courtroom every season, I would love it if they just did that with 24 in general. It's like, just maybe have it be an anthology. Just like every season, there's a new group of people with a new purpose and mission.
Oh, that would be kind of cool. That'd be a nice, cool format.
And then slowly, maybe like the Breaking Bad universe, slowly reconnected to all the other guys. Like at the end of this, you get a pat on the back from Wayne Palmer, or Chloe to break you out.
Going back to Charles Logan's character, there was like a couple times where you thought that he'd been killed at some point, because
season six, I thought he was gone.
Season six, yeah. And then he pops back up in season 7, right?
And then when they bust him out of prison for season 8 and have him be like a supervisor, I'm like, no, this is the most incompetent government ever.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, it was telling.
Who's running
it,
though?
It reminded me of some of today's people, who the Oliver Norths of the world, you know, just people who have had an infamous scandal and then somehow, you know, got, you know, freed or cut a deal with a district attorney, and now they can do all these other mischievous things or be a lobbyist. And you're like, man, no one ever really goes away, do they?
No, not really. It's like, that's why when Tony pops back up, and after you thought that he was killed by the drone strike, if I'm not mistaken, it's like, you think that, you know, he's gone. He's not. So I was always hoping and wishing that Michelle wasn't killed either, but, you know, didn't get that wish, unfortunately.
Did not. Michelle should have been on there longer, though, for sure.
I know. I loved her character. I loved the relationship between her and Tony.
I liked how they brought Tony Milo back, but his was interesting because it's like season 6 is kind of a season 2 rehash, partially. It's like, once again, they're threatening to go to war with another country, and then they're deciding, hey, we got to have some office romance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The what would you think is, because when I was doing some research on the villains of 24, I mean, everybody had different rankings for, you know, like you know, top 20, top 24, you know, type of thing. But I don't want to go all, you know, 24 characters in. But what do you think is like a Mount Rushmore of the evil or villain characters from the show? If your you favorite top four villains, yes.
Oh, man. So hard.
I know. Tell me about it.
I know Henderson's a big fan favorite, but yeah, I would probably have to go with Logan and General Juma and then Bierko and then probably Saunders, because I know everyone has fun with the Salazars in season three and the Drazen families, but I feel like those guys are kind of more fun in that they got resources, but they're letting emotional stakes kind of drive their various betrayals of each other.
And I'm not that sure now.
A few years ago, my wife was killed because of my job. My daughter's never been the same since. This last year, well, you know what I went through to bring you in. What'd I get for it? A pat on the back, in the end, a demotion, and a heroin habit. I'm tired of putting my ass on the line for nothing. I'm done putting my ass on the line for nothing.
So I just prefer the ones who is like, man, like Marwan. Okay, so maybe I take it back. So Logan, Marwan, Juma, Bierko. No.
Nice.
Saunders, Juma, Marwan, Logan. Okay, final answer. Yeah, because I got to applaud the guys who had their deck of cards and they pretty much could win like 50 chess games in a row.
Yeah, for me, I always, you know, season one always holds a special place in my heart. So Nina Myers is on my top four.
No, that's fine. Her and Ira.
The Marwan was good. Charles Logan. Shen Z.
Okay. Yeah. That torture.
He was the one that almost.
Yeah.
Yep. Plus, he almost broke Bauer. I mean, he did at some point.
He really did. And to then just like, when you see that final, like, there's a lot of great rack focus shots, especially when they're doing CTU or presidential briefings. And for those who don't know, that's where the camera doesn't move, but it goes out of focus, like on a different person in the same frame. And I always loved how with that one, you had what almost looked like a crane shot mixed in with just slowly fading out. Like, it's like, but just as Ching is saying, by the way, Jack, I'm not going to kill you. So you're going to feel every pain, you know, broken rib, every just electrocution, everything.
Don't you even try and play that game with me. Mr. Burnett, I've been doing this a long time, and I can tell the difference, especially when a man is under duress, if he's got information that I need or if I'm just wasting my time. And I promise you, I am not wasting my time.
Yes.
And then to have that teaser where, did you ever see any of the fun kind of, I think they, like little teaser mini episodes that would get people hyped up that were on the DVDs?
No, I don't think we ever got the DVDs back when they were.
It's all good.
Out, but
season three, for whatever reason, they had. No, they didn't have one for season three, but they had. I think it was on the UK version. They had one where Jack actually uses the F word.
Oh, really?
It shows him quitting CTU and everything while showing the various coyotes that the Mexican criminals who decide to provide the bomb that opens up season four on the train.
Yep.
And
yes,
season five, they did a fun one just showing him putting Chloe into hiding while he also runs away from one of Logan's assassins on a motorcycle. And that was just a cool brief excuse for a chase scene. But season six was like the last one they did. And that was just empowering because they had a debrief where they show him getting interrogated at the end of season six by some CTU hounds. They opened it up with I think it was either online and then on the DVD, but they show him actually trying to escape his prison camp and
really
miserably.
Boy, that'd be fun if we'd be able to find like those videos. That'd be fun to kind of.
I think you can find them on YouTube.
Most likely. That'd be fun to.
They're goodies.
Track down.
Yeah. They're not on Hulu, so you might as well look up YouTube, see if they got them.
Yeah, exactly. Or either that or track down the DVDs.
You can do that too.
But you said some of them are on the UK version of the DVDs, right?
I think so, but I think 24 Spoilers has them all too.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, they have almost all the special features. Kudos to them, because I do like to, when I post Instagram videos, post a lot of behind the scenes videos from 24 and Prison Break, because it's just so intricate, just showing all the editors pacing away, the demolition guys setting up the practical explosions, and all the various producers working on the weekends while the directors and main casts have taken off for the day to film, you know, insert shots, B-roll with the stand-ins and stunt doubles, you know.
Oh, nice.
It's just, when you see something like that, it's just, it's good to remind people. It's like, because I don't see that kind of discipline as much anymore. I mean, even when I've been an extra, I would be on non-union sets where I would see people want to get in the lead actor's face and they're cool with it and everything. I'm like, yeah, but you won't get that in anywhere else. You know, you can't
exactly
just walk up to the lead without being asked to leave.
Yeah, definitely. You had mentioned at one point a podcast, 20 years of 24, right?
Yes.
Yes. I wanted to make sure to get that.
Ryan T. Richardson, baby, you're doing great job. And I'll just say that director John Cassar is pretty much the Hitchcock of TV right now. I just love how he uses suspense on all his different movies and shows. And I love how he finds a way to even still work with some of this 24 actors.
Yeah, I watched Rabbit Hole with Kiefer Sutherland. That's
really
one of his projects, right?
Yeah.
That's one of Cassar's projects, if I'm not mistaken. He's
directing episodes of FBI now, but
FBI.
But yeah, no, we could totally do a special on the Night Agent and Rabbit Hole for sure. I mean, I do applaud Kiefer for, you know, first for a while he's just being the concerned dad or the psycho or the detective, and now after 24, he pretty much opened two layers for him. Is like, you can now either be a spy or, you know, off the grid federal guy like on Touch or Rabbit Hole, or you can be the president on the First Lady and Designated Survivor.
Oh, Designated Survivor. I like that one too. I forgot about, you know, because
there's so many villains there that made you secretly wish, I'm waiting for a Logan connection somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. You're just waiting for one of those 24 connections.
Oh, and the actor out in Kanto from The Following and X-Men was just so good as his chief of staff turned vice president. But I felt like he brought a similar gravitas that Carlos Bernard brought as Tony Almeida, where he's a strong Latino American, but he's not being exploited based on his race. And he's just a very well-spoken individual who wants to turn a new leaf in his life. And yeah, we could totally talk some great Designated Survivor moments, because man, it's just people remember those kinds of shows. Like that show, I mean, 24 kind of brought people out of the line work to just see how you can make addicting TV. But then when you get Designated Survivor to just reinvigorate how people can talk about subject matter that they can't discuss at the dinner table, it's like, man, you did your job.
Yeah, exactly. If I could meet Harry Bosch in life, I mean, obviously I've met Tyus Glover.
I would hire him on the spot as a private eye, say, hey, can you track down this hate crime or this unusual kidnapping or missing person?
Exactly.
I trust you as opposed to Vic Mackey, who's going to steal my money and then kill a bunch of cartel guys on the show.
Yeah, definitely don't want to do that.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of characters I wouldn't mind meeting. I mean, like the real life characters, not just the actors that portrayed them.
1,000%. Even the ones who were in like one episode as like a henchman or a sniper.
Yeah, exactly.
How did
you?
I mean, Jeff Kober's had a big career on Sons of Anarchy and Walking Dead, but to me, he will always be that asshole who killed David Palmer.
Yep.
Who's like, and now that I've confessed this, you will take me to the hospital, right, Jack? And Jack's like, oh, I lied. He goes all Charles Bronson, I lied.
Oh, of course.
No funeral for you.
He killed his one of his best friends, you know.
It would have been one thing had you just been a bad person who kills people for money like Mandy, but oh, you killed the president. Probably the best president in the world.
Yep. See, that's just it. It's like when the show was first on, it's like you were rooting for David Palmer. You were rooting for Jack Bauer.
You were.
Yeah.
Even when they were wrong, is like, what do you do when, I mean, the power TV shows and even some of these other shows are just reminding everyone, where do you draw the line when the people you serve are hypocrites or in it for their own careers, and when the villains, they're not right, but they're basically going to be let off after just murdering thousands of people? Is like, we're not even trying to, I mean, I've even seen both sides of the political equation who don't even care for the show. Like, I would see conservative guys who didn't find it fun, even though they agree with the politics. I'd see liberal guys who just found it formulaic. But the people who it does speak to, I think, just are reminded of how it's just, there's some stuff that there really is no answer for. There's, and you have to just kind of keep just thinking about it, processing it, instead of just leaving it to the viewer to decide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This isn't like The Office, where it's pretty clear cut who the villains are, but everyone's oblivious.
Oh, of course.
I'm just behaving.
like we've said a couple times, layers upon layers with 24.
Layers.
Never knew who was gonna pop up next or be a mole.
Oh, and like Bosch, you can kind of get a feel of people who, if there's anything TV people love more than anything, it's working with other famous TV people. And so when you see a show that is so clearly inspired by kind of another show, just applauded. Like, I would see the unit guys put each other in each other's independent movies. But with 24, I will definitely just every once in a while see kind of a federal agent show or a guy on the edge who's one step away from a being fired and prosecuted. You know, just you get that kind of same gist. And I don't know if it's just how they frame all these sweat inducing moments or what, but once again, man, it was a treat having you back on.
Oh, fun being back on.
I thought you did good.
But when there's so many bad guys or so many villains in a TV show that has spanned 9-10 seasons or 10 years or whatever, it's difficult to kind of remember some of those moments or some of those.
Even when we
guys,
rewatch so. It, we still have to be a little careful. And you're like, wait a second.
Yep. Yeah, because it's like when I was rewatching season 8 with Katie Sackhoff, I'm like, oh, that's right. She's the evil. So it's like it's fun, you know. That's why it's always fun to go back and rewatch those seasons, those episodes, because with all how many twists and turns 24 has, I mean, a lot of other shows have done it too, but you just kind of forget about them at times as well. So
it's so much to take in.
Exactly. A lot to take in. And but that also goes back to the writers and the creators as well too. It's like you've made all these characters come into a show, all these different villains, all the even the good characters too. It's like, I mean, to write that many characters into a show, it's just amazing.
This and the Star Treks and even Ted Lasso, I just love revisiting the seasons because there's so much to grab onto, unlike other shows where you can pretty much do an hour and you've covered most of the bases. It says a lot for a show where it's like you can revisit so many aspects of it, interview all these people, want to interview even more people.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't imagine doing like a breakdown episode for like a show like 24 now. You know, it's like, because it's like 24 episodes to
season,
break down.
But it would be, you would still want to even just layer even the seasons.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is what's going to happen between episodes, or this is what happens between episodes 1 and 4 or 1 and 6 or whatever. So, yeah. So, because it's like working with the So Many Shows website and podcast people, it's like we only break down one episode, but it's 10 episodes a season, so it goes by really fast. So so trying to break down 24 episodes of a show would be, that'd be a lot of homework. With as many plot twists as what some shows have, it's pretty fun. It would be fun to dive into something like that though too, but
oh, totally,
a lot of homework. But I appreciate you having me on again.
Anytime.
Always good talking to you, and hopefully we can talk more 24 down the road.
Oh yeah, and we'll get plenty of others on here too. We'll keep doing polls. Is like, what, instead of just Patreon sounds like a good idea until you see people kind of funning around with it. Is like, hey, we want to give you a deliberately bad movie we know you won't like. It's like, no, let's just do a blind pick on movies and shows like you know someone wants to talk about, but doesn't get discussed enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, keep binging the streaming networks. Plenty of fun stuff this year on Apple and Hulu, and Screenbox is taken off too. And I applaud all these guys.
A lot of shows to watch.
Yeah, and no shortage.
No, never is. Well, maybe there will be a shortage coming up here soon with the writer's strike going on, but hopefully it doesn't slow things down too much. You know, a year down the road, hopefully.
Hopefully by Thanksgiving, man.
Hopefully, fingers crossed, because with favorite shows that are out there, you always hope that the actors get back to work and getting back to making more content for fans and everything.
Something. I thank you ever so much, man. This was just, it never gets old.
No, definitely. Like I said, I'm due for another 24 rewatch because I got to take some notes for certain things. So, I appreciate you having me on again. Thank you.
Anytime.
Good luck to the next one, right?
See you on the next one. Well, we will keep boogieing.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and foodie debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.